stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
I sadly regret to inform everybody here that it is not coming home. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You are the world champion! Good evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 152 of Motorsport 101. I'm your totally not salty lead host, Andre Harrison. And welcome to my inevitable demise. Joining me in the next hour and a half of suffering is Mr. Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yep, here. This is the second. Third time I've been disappointed by Germany so far this summer.
There's a list. There's a list. It's not good. It's like Germany's World Cup, Mesut Ozil, and now Sebastian Vettel shits the bed at Hockenheim. Great.
Mesut, you can be yours now. That's
yeah, yes. You do you yes. Now.
You do you, Mesut. You're the real MVP. But in the blue corner, as always, representing Tennessee, as always, Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Yes, I believe we are going to be in for a good time as we break down this German Grand Prix. I am just to be real, that was gutting to actually watch as it happening. Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, true story. I was at work watching this Grand Prix with you, like via totally legal sources on my phone, and after I saw Seb in a fence, I was pretty much numb, and I didn't say a single word to my cashier for the last hour and a half of my shift. And this was meant to be me celebrating because I've now got 2 weeks off work. Oh god, oh dear! I may need counsel at this rate. It's not been a good weekend, folks.
Enjoy your vacation time, though.
I'm trying to. Okay, I'm just gonna get through this podcast first. Then I can forget it ever happened. Because in my mind, this race doesn't already exist. This race is basically a figment of RJ's imagination.
Damn! This was I gotta say though, I penned this out in like 4 hours. I don't know what just happened. There was like a rainstorm that came to mind. Somehow, Brendan Hartley got back in the points. It's wild. Yeah. This whole thing, this whole entire fan fiction that I've completely penned out, which we will now discuss over the next hour and a half of Motorsport 101.
Yep. It was a nightmare. It was a terrible incident. And then Annie Raceman came and cheered me up. It was a good time for all involved. It was a horrible nightmare. Places you can find us real quick. We are on YouTube.com at YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Again, massive thanks to everybody that's been subscribing. In the weeks since I last talked about this Ferrucci video, it now has 26,000 views. What the hell is wrong with you people? It's absolutely ridiculous. That, and on top of that, we have a new preview of episode 151 up on YouTube as well, talking about Laguna Seca returning to the IndyCar calendar for 2019. Subscribe if you haven't already. We're only 46. A nice Valentino number, away from 2,000 subscribers now. So if you haven't already, please give it a little bit of your time. Some exclusive content will be up on there as well in the coming days. Always a fun time. Facebook.com/ Motorsport 101 for that one. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow our handles personally, you can do so at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, that's with 2 Ks. And at RJ O'Connell for RJ's Twitter. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon at patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and to Bike Live as well. If you guys haven't seen it already, the night we're actually recording this, believe it or not, episode 69.
Nice!
Delayed, we got there in the end, of Bike Live is now live as well. Cloud 93, it's a review of all the action from the Sachsenring in MotoGP as Marc Marquez made it 9 poles, 9 wins in a row in Germany in dominant fashion ahead of Wait, Valentino Rossi in second? That old man refuses to go away. And Maverick Viñales in third as well. A fun race for all involved, unless your name's Jorge Lorenzo. Moto2, Brad Binder getting his first Moto2 victory. Nice one for King there, eh? Fun times indeed. And Moto3, where Jorge Martin broke the chasing pack, and an absolutely loaded news section, including movie star leaving the Yamaha team, and the World Superbike City season starting to take some shape now as Tom Sykes announces the end of his time at Kawasaki at the end of the season, and Yamaha retains both its riders in Alex Lowes and Michael Vandermark. All that and a whole lot more on Bike Life episode 23 times 3 up now on SoundCloud and where all good shows are available. And don't forget, if you back us at $10 level, you get access to my Discord server where we're currently building an extension to the Sin Bin as we speak. It's a fun time for all involved, unless you're like Gearhead, who's listening in right now, who's on floor 419. Not so nice. But I could put this nightmare off no longer. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the German Grand Prix.
Es nacht, komm nacht Haus.
My name is Andre Harrison, and I am a recovering Vettel fan.
Well, that's this ring has had it all. It had team orders a go-go. It had the leader going off. It had pit stop blunders. It had great racing. It had literally everything under the sun you could possibly want from a Formula One Grand Prix.
Yeah, I openly admit, I mean, I scored it on the race view scale at 9 points a 7.5, only because the first half was so relatively tame, but, like, the second half of this race is a 10, easily. It was an utterly insane second half of the race. Again, as King said, it had just about everything you could hope for in a Formula One race, including the quote-unquote major shenanigans red button being pushed. We'll get to that very shortly, but we'll break down how the weekend played out. Seemed to be, you know, pretty usual stuff in practice, besides FP3 being a very wet FP3, but the track dried out by qualifying in the end anyway. You could see what F1 was trying to do because they had the track dryers out. They were trying to dry that place up for qualifying, which I thought was quite funny. Qualifying was running pretty standard until Lewis Hamilton backed out of a lap in Q1, having messed up his turn one exit. For some weird reason, he stays on the left-hand side of the curb. And next thing you know, he's broken the floor of his car and damaged the hydraulic system. And all of a sudden, Lewis Hamilton is out of qualifying. He makes Q2, but his session, his running on Saturday was effectively over, to the shock and horror of everyone on the internet. I mean, Kig, like, is that an unforced error by Lewis Hamilton? Because it kind of seems that way.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. And, like, post-qualifying, it seemed like there was a massive argument. Was his hydraulic system broken before he hit the curb? Or was it broken after he hit the curb? It literally Yes. became a chicken and the egg argument over Twitter. Yeah. Across all of F1.
I saw Merckx people arguing it. I saw Karun Chanhok arguing it on his Twitter. Like, there was, like, because you know what F1 fans are like. We love to apportion blame to things. And it was like, was it Lewis's fault? Nah, it couldn't possibly be his fault. No, it's definitely his fault or something. But, like, iconic scenes of Lewis Hamilton trying to push his stricken car back to the pit lane like it's Nigel Mansell back in the late 80s again, which I thought was quite cool. Sad, but very cool. And then he finally gives up on the side of the road and basically, you know, less on the halo, and you know.
But unlike Nigel Mansell, he does not pass out and bonk his head on the tire.
He's very fit these days, Lewis. He's very fit. But yeah, that was the big shocker in qualifying, effectively. Lewis Hamilton making Q2, but not being able to run any further. So Lewis was forced to start the race from 14th on the grid. Apparently, according to Gerd on Discord, he says hydraulics went before the curb hop. Curb hop was like basically the aftermath of it, was the effect and not the cause. So, you know, read into that what you will. But yes, yeah. We got to Q3 in the end. It looked pretty straightforward for Valtteri. He even improved on his second lap, even though it looked like his second lap was dead in the water. But then he pulled out a third sector from the gods. Just all of a sudden, just like take pole position for about 20 seconds. It was actually in real time pretty epic to watch. He was about a tenth and a half down into the final sector. He ends up like finishing 2/10 up. It was amazing to say the least. But then Sebastian, about 20 seconds further back down the road, was half a second quicker than anything that had come before it through the first two sectors. And despite a pretty sloppy third sector, still set his 55th career pole position, and only the second time he's ever qualified in Hockenheim on pole position.
A track where he had only led 3 total laps going into this race.
Yeah, it's not like it's a bogey circuit or anything. he was on pole ahead of Valtteri Bottas once again, and Kimi Raikkonen in third. As mentioned, the first half of this race itself was pretty quiet by F1 standards.
Not standard, even.
Yeah, you know, Sebastian got away pretty cleanly. Verstappen tried a couple of pass attempts on Kimi in the opening lap, couldn't find a way around him. Vettel pulls out about a 3.5-4 second lead before the first round of pit stops. Kimi Raikkonen comes in early as Lewis Hamilton was basically moving up the field once again like Moses parting the Red Sea. He started, as mentioned, from 14th place and was running P6 after about 11 laps. He's very good at this whole driving thing, Lewis. It's kind of annoying because, like, a lot of the cars he was racing against didn't even try to defend position.
Shout-outs to Fernando Alonso, who was just like,
"Get out of the way!"
I'm seeing Fernando. He was just like, "I'm good."
It was like, you know what, sod this. And it's like, I don't know if anyone here's ever seen it, but if anyone's ever seen Valencia 2015 in MotoGP, the race after Rossi kicked out Marquez, like the time when Rossi's trying to come up through the back of the field, Danilo Petrucci sees him and he literally pulls to one side to let Valentino past. That was exactly what it was like. There's a lot of bike.
Yeah, if I had to compare it to like. Yeah, if I had to compare it to something else, like, if you've seen a John Boy's video, he's talked about it before, but, like, the base is empty, intentional walk.
Oh, God, yeah.
The worst that can happen is a solo home run. Are you really that scared?
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, many people were scared of the approaching number 44 Silver Arrows.
Yeah, everybody just got out of the way. We've mentioned this last time out, F1 media and Twitter fans, okay? And I'm talking about Lewis Hamilton's performance as a whole here, as well, a little bit on top of this. Getting, like, passing through the field is not what it used to be when the Mercedes is a second and a half a lap faster than anything outside of the big four. Like, and I'm very tentatively throwing Renault in there because they're the best of a bad bunch right now.
But they still couldn't lap in the 118s. Like I defer to counselor Sam Collins, that said a friend of the show. The big three were all lapping in the 118s. Everybody else was stuck in the 120s throughout most of the race.
So what are we really talking about here?
Yeah, they were literally in another class.
Welcome this week to this week's round of Formula 1.5.
Let's look at the LMP2 class.
That's what this was. Because again, like by lap 11, I think Lewis was running in sixth. And I have to say, brilliant strategy call from Ferrari to put Kimi Raikkonen in early for his first stop. Many people were hinting at the fact that he may be two-stopping. They left the door open for a potential two-stopper. They did predict that rain was coming, but we weren't thinking about rain because it never rains in F1.
Right. Fellas, if she tells you that rain is coming in 15 minutes, it means she does not want to put out, because that's what happens in the Formula 1 race. If it says rain is happening in 15 minutes, there is no moisture in the air whatsoever.
None in the slightest. It's not happening, people. So, like, Kimi Raikkonen is actually on fire here at this point. Like, Raikkonen was setting fastest lap after fastest lap. His pace was excellent in the early goings. Sebastian is usually just keeping his gap and managing his ultra-soft tyres and waiting for a one-stopper a little bit, which is obviously the faster strategy a little bit later on in the race. Remember that, it becomes important later. Vettel eventually stops, he's covered off Valtteri successfully, and now he's closing in on Kimi Raikkonen, whose tyres are 11 laps older at this point. Now, it doesn't take long for Sebastian to get into Kimi Raikkonen's dirty air range, and Vettel starts complaining on the radio that, you know, he's just burning up his tyres, they're getting too hot, you know, just running in the dirty air of Kimi Raikkonen, and we all know what the implications of this was. It seemed like a team orders call was what was being asked for here. And about five laps later, we heard it on Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen had known the jig was up here at this point. And Raikkonen just said this.
Like, props to him for knowing. Yeah,
like to just to sum up the radio message, it was basically the race engineer saying, Kimi, Vettel's on a different strategy than you. He's going to stop at a different lap. Could you, like, not hold him up, please? And Kimi's like, yeah, if you wanted me to just do it, just tell me to do it.
Kimi Raikkonen, Kimi's a good boy. Like, I have to rate Kimi. He is a proper team player. Like, he knew what was coming. He asked straight up, do you want me to move over for him? They did. Vettel takes the lead of the race again, and the internet goes at this point. Given the way this weekend had already played out with Hamilton's car in a ditch on Saturday afternoon, this was basically the internet going Super Saiyan right here with rage that Ferrari has once again pulled the team order strategy out of their asses again. Vettel takes the lead, and given his pace, given he cleared off from Kimi Raikkonen very quickly, it showed, at least in my opinion, Ferrari did make the right call in telling Kimi to move aside, basically, on this one.
But by the way, basically, they were just like, they were trying to be coy about it. Like, dude, it's not 2010. there's no ban. There's no, like,
team orders illegal
ban on it. You don't have to code it anymore. Just tell him, like, Kimi, get the hell out of the way. That's what Alan Permain
did.
Yeah,
team orders are now legal in F1, for the record, in case you've forgotten.
You may not have to like them, but they're legal, and sometimes they are beneficial. Yep. And in the case of Sebastian Vettel, they were very beneficial because he was clearing off.
Clearly the right decision in this context, and people were poking at me on Twitter when that was happening. I was like, Dre, we've got something to say here, and I said in response, team orders are a necessary evil, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And like, the vindication in that was Vettel's pace as soon as he got free. Again, it was several seconds faster than Kimi over the next few laps. And he was back to generating a buffer again as Valtteri was reeling him in for what ended up being the fight for second. And then, one more thing I want to get in there first. Lewis Hamilton changes. He started the race on the soft compound tyre compared to the ultra softs the others had started the race on. Poor Daniel Ricciardo, who had started on mediums at this point, was out with another technical problem. For those keeping score at home, Daniel Ricciardo has now had a 50% technical retirement rate in the last 20 races. 10 DNFs.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, hold on one second, though, because this requires a rewind, because Daniel Ricciardo decided he was going to start this race last because Red Bull changed out pretty much all the components of his power unit before the start of the weekend.
Yep.
So that's why he started from the back. And then after changing all of that stuff, everything just fucked.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Not again. Like, for anyone that wants to make out the claim here that Lewis Hamilton is the unluckiest driver in F1, I present to you the man with 10 technical DNFs in his last 20 races, Daniel Ricciardo.
I can say without any hint of irony whatsoever, I think he might be very, very happy that Red Bull is coming, joining forces with Honda, because it might actually be a more reliable package. That's said with no hint of irony or sarcasm whatsoever.
Indeed. Poor Daniel Ricciardo. As a result of this one, he sunk back to fifth in the Drivers' Championship, and he's only 1 point ahead now of Max Verstappen, who was having that awful, wretched start to the year. Verstappen's now reeled him in and is only a point behind him. More on the Drivers' Championship in a bit. But as mentioned, Hamilton started on the soft tyre. He put on the ultra softs for the ending stint, and he was a Exocet missile. It was, again, purple sectors for days. Remember that. It becomes very important later.
One also tangent during this, stint of pit stops, where it seemed like it was starting to get moist out.
Yeah, like,
and Pierre Gasly, Toro Rosso decided to take a gamble on Pierre Gasly because for some reason Toro Rosso thought it was dripping like a water fountain and put him out there on full wet.
Yeah, the rain comes down with about 15 laps to go, about 18 laps to go, and yeah, Toro Rosso gamble with Gasly on full wet. Clearly the rest of the F1 field is playing checkers while Pierre Gasly and Toro Rosso are playing chess.
4D
chess.
Galaxy. All right, it's like small brain. There's only rain at turn six because that's basically where it was falling. Let's stay on dry tires and make sure to keep tidy on turn six. Big brain. Let's come in for intermediates because it's very wet turn six and may rain around the rest of the track. Galaxy brain. Full wet tires. Come in this lap.
All or nothing. A monsoon is coming to Hockenheim. Amazingly, and this may shock you, it didn't work. And for the first time, I think, in F1 history, as Jason Poland points out in the Discord, every brand of tyre that Pirelli had brought to the weekend at this point was on track at the same time because Charles Leclerc and Fernando Alonso had also gambled with early stops on the intermediate tyre.
And it didn't work for them
either. They were about 10 seconds a lap slower on their overheating intermediate tyre because it just wasn't raining enough yet. Not for another 5 laps or so. Shout out to Pierre Gasly, who posted the hilarious picture on Twitter of Gasly after the race, saying how it felt yesterday on full wet, and it's a picture of a man in scuba gear in a desert. Kind of says it already, doesn't it? How could you possibly argue with that? So, 5 laps later, it's lap 52. Sebastian Vettel has got a comfortable 8-second lead. Valtteri Bottas is somehow in the carnage past Kimi Raikkonen for second place. Lewis Hamilton is driving like a man possessed in fourth, taking about a second and a half a lap out of Seb's lead. There's 12 laps to go, and next thing you know, Seb locks up into the stadium section and hits the wall.
Clunk.
A very minor mistake, duly punished.
Dude, you never want to go full Monaco 88. Never go full Monaco 88.
I have not seen a German sporting favorite get sent home so emphatically since it came off the foot of Fabio Grosso in 2006. Dre, I am so sorry. I watched that with my dad, and we both just could not believe what had happened.
Like I said, I was numb. His. That was his race. That was a golden chance to punish Hamilton for his error/non-error in qualifying. That could have taken some good points going into Hungary. It's another strong Sebastian round. He's done well there in the past. He's actually currently bookie's favourite to win that race this weekend, funnily enough. But no. So this is the part where everyone looks to me in the corner for something rousing to say regarding this incident, and I was devastated. I can't lie. I was numb. I was completely, like, again, I was at work at the time. I didn't say a word to my cashier for like an hour and a half. I was just completely blank. I could not believe that had happened. Seb has barely put a foot wrong, all season. Like, the probably the biggest error he's made was going for the win at Baku on Valtteri Bottas and ended up dropping to fourth. That's about as big an error as he's made all year. And, yeah, it wasn't a big mistake. It was a minor lock-up into the stadium section, and it's the sort of corner where there's practically no runoff. It's straight onto gravel. The wall's very close. If you get it wrong there, you will beach it. And that's exactly what happened. And, shout out to DHL, who took the piss on their Motorsports Twitter page, saying, oh, look, it's Ferrari sponsored by UPS, and look what happens to it. Ends up crashing into the DHL wall. I'd like to remind DHL that they sponsor Ryan Hunter race car, because he's been full of good luck recently in IndyCar, right? Right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. DHL has been nothing but kind to me.
Yeah, tough. What a single fuck was given from me this day. Cheeky bastards. You could hear it on the radio. He was in tears after the incident. He was crying when he got out of the car. He could not believe what had happened. He was super apologetic. He knew what this meant. You know, he was very mature about it in the press conference afterwards when he was chatting to Buxton and the crew. He just said it was a silly mistake, and
More polite than other people were to Billy Butts.
Yes.
Shoutouts to Max Verstappen and or Timo, I believe, is a clock for flipping him off camera in the post race paddock pass.
Beautiful, but gutted to say the least. It is safe to say I was gutted on that one. So much so I didn't even want to take the piss out of the rampaging Hamilton fans who was laughing at me on Twitter. If you're one of those people, I sincerely hope you snag your ball sack in your jeans next time you put them on. I'm petty like that. I've got to take a tangent here for just 2 seconds. Forgive me, fellas. But this was one of the worst weekends I've ever seen for fan interactions on Twitter, and for the way the fans were reacting during the race weekend itself. I heard a loud, audible cheer from the Verstappen pocket of fans when Vettel had put it in the wall. That was disgraceful, in my humble opinion. And I the toxicity between the Hamilton fan base and the Vettel fan base is getting way out of hand. Like, it is bad. And don't get me wrong, this was the sort of weekend where it was going to go crazy because of the fluctuation of luck over the course of the weekend. Hamilton obviously having the error in qualifying, and then obviously Seb having the error during the race. And, like, I'm going to get a lot of Hamilton fans on my Twitter who only seem to pipe up when he's under criticism for something. It's always funny how that works. And the Vettel fans who can't help themselves whenever something good happens to him. I know many an example of Vettel fan accounts that go way off the fucking deep end whenever something positive happens to him in a title race. Whenever something negative happens, it's always somebody else's fault. This is my message to both of your fan bases. Cut the fucking bullshit, please. For the love of God. Do you know how lucky we are that we have 2 of the 5 or 6 best drivers of this generation competing against each other, head to head, both in teams that have won, you know, let them be themselves, like in the case of Lewis Hamilton, like Sebastian, who's followed his dream in following Schumacher's footsteps in being able to drive his car now going forward and being the face of the brand he was always wanted to be when he was a child. You guys don't know how lucky we have it as fans of these two drivers. Lewis is probably the best driver of his generation. Sebastian has been underappreciated, in my opinion, for years and years and years until this year. I think people have only really said, okay, Seb really is that special. Because he was a guy that we didn't take seriously because of the Red Bull era. Like, cut the fucking spitefulness, okay? I get it. We want to win. And this is coming from me, the guy that was trying to denounce Sebastian's title chances right from the start this year. And I've fallen into this trap. I really want him to win this world title now. More than anything, because it would just be like the cherry on top of what's been an incredible career. But please, for the love of God, stop attacking the other fan base. God, it's getting ridiculous, man. It's just
yeah, it's
bitter.
It's pretty much it's pretty much becoming football hooliganism, and every Grand Prix Sunday might as well be Derby Day at this point. Like, it's not going to stop until, like, a fan gets physically hurt.
It's fucking ridiculous. Like, what's it, as you said, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for this to stop happening? Because the amazing thing is that despite the history those two have got, it's amazing that Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel have nothing but the utmost respect to each other. I distinctively remember one of the first people in the paddock to congratulate Lewis when he got back in Mexico after winning last year's title was Sebastian Vettel. And they gave him a hearty hug and said congratulations and well driven. If their fan bases had half that decency, I'd have a much more enjoyable time watching races on Twitter. Because 95% of the time, it's wonderful. It's the 5% that ruin it for fucking everyone on both sides of the fence. And it needs to fucking stop. I've had enough. It is, like after the crash and seeing the reaction to it, seeing prominent esports players saying about how priceless that era was, guys that are representing the sport on a higher level now tweet with such vitriol. I'm just sitting there going, was that me 2 years ago? And I look at myself and I go, you know what? I can do fucking better than this. And I openly admit a level of hypocrisy here because I've been aggressive like that myself on numerous occasions in the past. But after that one, and sometimes it takes something negative like Sebastian putting it in the wall for that to happen. But I looked at that and I was like, was that me? Like, it's like that meme of the guy with the butterfly. It's like, is this F1 Twitter? And it's just like, God, is it really that bad? Yes, it really is that bad. So, guys, do better. Treat each other better. For fuck's sake, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Just treat it like an opportunity to shitpost, like I did when the rain started happening and I started parroting Albert Hammond lyrics.
Oh my god. Anyway, as a result of...
Oh, by the way, the race was still not over.
Yes.
Yeah, the race was not over.
There were still 11 laps to go. The safety car came out to recover Sebastian's stricken car. And everybody then changed to intermediate tyres. Remember this, it also becomes important because after the race got restarted, Valtteri Bottas has a crack at Lewis Hamilton for what at this point is now the race win. After Hamilton's pace got him back out in front of Raikkonen after he changed tyres. This was now a fight between the two Mercs for the wins. Valtteri isn't quite able to get it on Lewis. Obviously, the track dries out a little bit. Everyone switched back to ultras again. And Valtteri's told on the radio to hold position. Oh boy. So after all the Mercedes fans in the one corner was out here throwing Ferrari under the bus for team orders, Mercs pulls the exact same shit, basically, half an hour later.
Ferrari is the team that invented team orders. Ferrari, the only team that implement team orders in any regard. We're Mercedes. We definitely do not do anything of the sort.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, like
though I do have to mention something. Back in the 30s, Mercedes was the team that invented team orders.
Oh.
Yeah. Mercedes literally invented team orders.
Damn, I didn't know Tyrrell invented team orders back in the 30s. That's an F1 constructed session joke. Damn.
Next thing you know, King will be quoting Rudolf Crashiola again. It's really bad when he does that. But
I had no problem with this. I mean, yeah, Lewis has a distinct lead over Valtteri at this point. You could probably argue like, oh, maybe they should have also gotten a win. But with the position that Lewis Hamilton's in, knowing that, hey, one bad race and this could all swing back the other way, you kind of need to maximize his point tally when you can. It's not what we want to see as racing fans, but, you know, if you're thinking long game, like, yeah, I kind of don't have a problem.
The constructors' argument is the biggest one here. They were set for 43 points, while Ferrari was only going to get 15. Like, it would have been a 28-point swing in the constructors that would have gone away if they hit each other, possibly. I get it. I get why they did it. I'm not one of these guys that, like, I've never been against team orders. I've always said, as I said during the race on Twitter, it's a necessary evil. Although I will say, seeing some of the Mercedes fans on Twitter's backtrack from fucking space after half an hour beforehand when Ferrari had pulled the exact same shit with team orders was kind of funny. I have to admit that. But
yeah, and like, if you take the whole situation into perspective, say they let them fight each other and they don't touch, Kimi could have gotten close enough that a potential 5-second penalty would have dropped Lewis down to third place.
Yeah, Raikkonen was still a threat. He was right there, and Raikkonen, at least in my opinion, drove really well this weekend. And you know, in the race, had a great pace and could have easily still been a threat. So yeah, the safest play was Lewis to pull away and get the win. If Valtteri can hold off Kimi, it's a 1-2 finish, which Merckx would have absolutely dreamed of on Saturday night, like that, like not in a month of Sundays. So
I'm pretty sure they would have dreamed about that after, like, the last set of pit stops.
Yeah, probably. More on that in a minute. But, yeah, it's a pretty straightforward finish after that one. A little bit of craziness from Romain Grosjean in the midfield we'll get to as well in a bit. But, yeah, Lewis Hamilton wins the German Grand Prix from 14th on the grid. The only time in recent times I can remember was Fernando Alonso in Valencia 2012, when he won that race from 11th. I think that's the last time I can think of a guy winning a Grand Prix outside the top 10 in terms of grid position. Yeah, lowest win, as Henry points out, lowest win since Kimi Raikkonen's epic comeback at Japan in 2005. One of the best F1 races I've ever seen. That race is a classic. Go find it if you haven't already. But it was a win, or so we thought. There was one more twist in the tale. Lewis Hamilton was called into the steward's office after the podium presentation. There was an investigation into one of his pit stops. Or wasn't it? I'll let King go from here, because he is our official rules commissioner on the Motorsport 101 podcast. So now, I present to you a new segment on this show, King's Technical Corner.
You're making it sound like it's going to be, like, tame and calm and not me being, like, really pissed off.
Like, all I can see, I can just imagine it now, King. You in, like, in a dark room in front of a fireplace. Like, you've got the smoking jacket on, a bottle of bourbon poured out. It's a nice, calm, disciplined manner, right? Right? No?
We have to start at the most natural point, where Lewis and Mercedes get summoned to the steward's office after the race for violating a part of the technical regulation saying that you're not allowed to cross the pit entry line. I was going back and forth about this because the wording in the International Sporting Code is actually quite vague.
Yeah, it's up so it's you can choose. Interpretation. Yeah. Don't worry, guys. It gets way worse from here.
Oh God, let's start before the race director even reaches the office, where Charlie Whiting to the media says, "I don't know what the penalty is going to be. It could be a reprimand. It could be 5 seconds. It could be 10 seconds,
or it could be behind what's behind this door.
Is it a zonk?
Oh, it could be a disqualification. It could be an exclusion for the rest of the season. It could be the dunk tank."
But let's this vaguely worded this vaguely worded piece of the International Sporting Code, which he was charged for, is International Sporting Code Appendix L, Chapter 4, Article 4.D. The excerpt is pretty much exclusively about pit entry, and it says, except in cases of force majeure accepted as such by the stewards, the crossing in any direction of the line separating the pit entry and the track by a car entering pit lane is prohibited. And what I kind of saw as vague as that last couple of words, by a car entering pit lane. So, the article's written in a way that it assumes you're crossing the bollard, like you're crossing after the baller to dive in the pit lane, which wasn't the case in this situation. It was Lewis, he was to the right of the bollard, but just bailed out. And this is not like North American Motorsports where there's a commitment code. What if once you're inside, you have to stay inside? It's not like that.
Imagine Formula One, the pinnacle of motorsport, the most refined and sophisticated, the most genius minds, have much shittier wording on less clearly defined wording that, you know, those primitive Americans across the pond with their NASCAR and IndyCar, and they only know how to make 500 left turns for 5 hours.
And continuing on, like, during the middle of this hearing, just the internet was having their own hearing, where basically the last time we ran into a situation like this was the 2016 European Grand Prix in Azerbaijan, where Kimi received a 5-second penalty for breaking the same part of the international sporting code, but not in the same way, because it was a pit entry line, but it wasn't at the entry, because Azerbaijan, if you recall where their pit entry is, they need to have a pre-entry because they're going like at 200 miles an hour at pit entry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this will be the first recollection of the 2016 Baku Grand Prix that does not include the words Le Mans and Clash in it.
In the widely circulated document, you know, that gives Kimi the 5-second penalty, they also mentioned that was stated in the event notes that Kimi couldn't do what he did. And yes, there's a rule book, there's sporting regulations, everything, but because in motorsport, because each and every track is different, each and every track has its own set of rules or event notes that could change year on year, but it's always posted publicly before the race. And in Kimi's case, it said, it basically made it in Baku that there was a commitment code. If you were committed to going down pit lane at the start of the line, you had to go down pit lane or you would receive a penalty. Kimi violated that, so it was automatic penalty. But in this case, Lewis had leeway because most of the regulations have leeway in cases where it doesn't seem like the infringement was done with malice.
Yeah, and this is where it gets sketchy, because, like, the stewards took a look at this case. The meeting went on for a long time, like a good 45 minutes to an hour, and spoiler alert, he got to keep the win. Because Lewis broke it to us before anybody else did. Lewis came out of the stewards room, went straight to the press conference, said, "They're not going to take it away from me," etc., etc. Now, I will read out to you now what the official report says from the stewards. Fact. Car 44 crossed the white line separating the pit entry and the track. Offence. Breach, as King mentioned, breach of Appendix L, Chapter 4, Article 4D of the International Sporting Code. Decision. A reprimand, and the internet goes Super Saiyan 3. The reason, and this is a long one, so bear with me, people. The stewards reviewed video and audio evidence heard from the driver of car 44, Lewis Hamilton, and the team representative. It was clear that there was an infringement on the above-mentioned rule. The driver clearly crossed the line separating the pit entry from the track. It continues. In deciding on the penalty for the infringement, we look into account the following mitigating factors. 1. The driver and the team candidly admitted the mistake and the fact there was confusion within the team as to whether or not to stay out or to enter the pit, and that led to the infringement. 2. The fact that the infringement took place during a safety car period. 3. At no time was there any danger to any other competitor, and the change in direction was executed in a safe way. Taking all of the above into account, including considering previous infringements of the above rule, we are of the opinion that a reprimand would be the appropriate penalty for the sad infraction on this occasion. The last paragraph's just talking about the right to appeal, so I'll ignore that. But King, do I have the right to be absolutely pissed at reason number one, at least?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I get the other two reasons, and it's nice that they clarified that it doesn't matter if you're, you know, at physically enter pit lane, if you cross the line any at all, that's definitely against the rules. It's nice they clarified that. But, man, no, that should not be a reason to let anyone off easy. Like, yeah, I definitely did the thing, guys. I'm so sorry.
Like reason number one is basically, yeah, we admitted it, and yeah, we didn't know what we were doing. Like, how does that make the situation better?
It's the guilt. It's like the guilty plea.
That's what
bargain.
It feels like. It's ridiculous.
And
I feel like I feel like
RJ.
Yes, I was about to say, like, even it ties back to Dre's point about phantom toxicity. If they rule the other way of this, well, that's just the FIA proving that they stand for Ferrari International Assistance and they're trying to screw Lewis Hamilton out of the title. Now that it was ruled this way, it's like, oh my goodness, the FIA clearly wants Lewis Hamilton to win because that's the driver that they're trying to make win all the time.
Yeah, I said it on Twitter at the time. They were damned if they did and they were damned if they didn't. If they did punish him, you're basically messing with a race result after the flag, and no one likes a race that is settled in the stewards box. Let's be honest with each other. Nobody likes that. If they don't punish him, you're basically letting the guy get away with breaking a hard and fast rule, and people are going to be pissed off about that. This was a lose-lose situation for the stewards, no question. But
even the thing about there being confusion on whether the box not is highly questionable, because we have audio evidence of Peter Boddington screaming in at Lewis, telling him to box.
Like, and reason number one being we didn't know what we were doing is not a valid reason to suggest a lesser penalty. That's total bullshit.
Yeah, that's like saying you can't plead ignorance. You can't say, oh, I didn't know that was, like, they knew it was rule, but you can't plead ignorance. You can't say that I didn't know what I was doing because that makes, you still broke the rule anyway.
Oh, shit, jury duty is today?
They still, like, listen, they still broke the rule, and they knew this was potentially coming because they told Lewis after the safety car came in to push because they said they might be a penalty. So they saw it coming. They knew there was a possibility this was going to happen, and I think Valtteri very cheekily stayed within 5 seconds just in case. But, okay, he gets a reprimand. Like,
no, I do have to admit, some people kind of, the last reason a lot of people throw on the bus, I would take it seriously legitimate, saying that it's not as big of a deal because it happened behind the safety car.
That's fine.
That's fair.
That's fair. That is fair. That is fine. No one is going quick. And yes, like, he was not an immediate threat to any other car on track, especially with how he re-entered. That's fine. The question on my mind is that you could easily argue this was another case of inconsistent stewarding. Because, like, okay, there's no hard and fast rule in the book to say how much of a penalty this should be. And I think that's part of the problem, because it's inherently...
That's getting changed.
Yeah, it's inherently designed to cause inconsistency. Because the stewards can give anything from a reprimand to a 10-second penalty for that. Like, this is, like, it reminds me a lot, and bear with me on this one, this is another small tangent. Does anybody here remember the 2016 British Grand Prix? Do you remember what happened with Nico Rosberg in that race? Where Rosberg had a gearbox problem, and the new rule about not being able to tell your driver how to nurse the car home?
Yep.
That rule came under trial because Mercedes openly broke that rule to keep Nico Rosberg in second place on that occasion. The rule was on trial, they gave him a 10-second time penalty, and that dropped him down to third behind Max Verstappen, and it cost him 3 points. Now, this is the problem. Like, you have, like, this is what happens when you have new rules. They inherently, and when rules come to trial, they breed inconsistency. And that is what's going to piss fans off. Not so much that Hamilton got a reprimand. Like, the punishment itself, I'm fine with. The problem is that if this happens again, are we going to see another reprimand, or are we going to get a time penalty like what happened with Kimi Raikkonen?
No, we're going to see a time penalty. We're going to see these rules tightened up. I feel like we're going to see a commitment cone by the time we get to Hungary in a week.
No, I don't think we'll ever see a commitment cone in F1 for this very reason, but I think it's more down to the FIA doesn't see this as being a precedent. Like, Lewis technically, like, in their eyes, still broke the rule. He got penalized for breaking the rule with a reprimand.
Because, as you know, free reprimands will cause a 10-place grid penalty.
Yes.
Over the course of the season. Technically, it is a punishment because it's basically strike one. So, strike two and three comes into play. If you get three in the season, you get a 10-place grid penalty. And Hamilton, I believe, had two a couple of years ago. So he's been a bit of a naughty boy in the past, but never enough to actually draw a big penalty. So this is a punishment. It's not. It's a slap on the wrist, basically, and three slaps means you're getting a 10-place grid drop. So yes, it is a form of punishment. It's just, you know, a race kind of hung on the line here. That's kind of the problem. In the context of the race itself, it could have easily been swung to Valtteri Bottas getting his first win of the season, and that just didn't quite happen. When will that Finn catch a break? For God's sake. But yes, the internet finally calmed down, and then the heavens opened. My God, it was like the rain was so bad. It was okay. We're red flagging this race, and it will not be restarted. Levels of rain.
It was so bad that the tunnels that the media and the crews have to use to leave the circuit were flooded, so they were stuck.
Yeah, Lee McKenzie had to throw out her shoes. Terrible thing.
You did not want that level of rain. You wanted some rain. You don't want monsoon. We can't actually race this levels of rain.
Yeah, and that was basically.
I'm fine with the level of rain where we got for like 30 seconds where everybody was just driving at about 80 kilometers an hour.
Yeah,
like I was ready to just like, hey, come over and watch this crap-ass driving display.
Yeah, basically. So,
I bet somewhere in hospitality, Franz Toss was like, damn it!
This was our moment! We could have won! God damn it! But, yeah, like, the tunnels were flooded, like, If anyone here subscribed to Nico Rosberg on his YouTube channel, he vlogged the post-race, obviously, outcomes. He was there for Sky Sports and RTL this weekend, and yeah, he was shin-deep in water, and that was after basically less than an hour's heavy rainfall. It was that deep. It was, like I said, it was red flag, and it will not be restarted levels of rain. Of course, it happened after the race itself, but hey, who cares? The second half of the race was completely bonkers. Here's the full result, officially, after that stewards meeting and whatnot. I'm just going to put it up on me for you right now. Because Lewis Hamilton takes the win in the end. He got to keep it by 4.5 seconds over Valtteri Bottas in second, who somehow still hasn't won a race this season. For God's sake. I'm not even the Finn fan here. King is, and I want him to win a race now. For God's sake. Get him a W. He deserves it, for crying out loud. Kimi Raikkonen in third in the end. Probably his best drive of the season, in my humble opinion, anyway. His fourth consecutive podium as well for Kimi Raikkonen, so good for him. Nice to see he's in a good run of form at the moment. Max Verstappen was bearing down on all three of them at the end, but ran out of laps in fourth place in the end. Nico Hülkenberg. Yeah.
What would have happened if he had not switched over to Anderson?
Oh, boy. That would have been fun. That would have been fun. There's a scary thought for you. Best of the rest award once again goes to Nico Hülkenberg in fifth, matching his best result of the season so far. In the Formula 1.5 standings, Nico Hülkenberg is doing the Lord's work at the moment.
This Hulk did not need to be controversially reinstated. He's already been there to begin with.
If you wanted to look at the Formula 1.5 standings, he now has a 34-point lead on Kevin Magnussen in second. What that means is if you took the top three teams out of the equation and scored from all the other drivers, etc., this would be Nico Hülkenberg's fourth win of the season. And he'd have a 43-point lead on Kevin Magnussen in second, who's 8 points ahead of Carlos Sainz in first. Big thanks to Nipan Shah for tweeting me that, by the way. Much appreciated, sir. Hülkenberg, once again, putting together a really solid season. Again, it's almost like he's really good at race cars or something. Maybe a big team should give him a chance. I don't know. Anyway, Romain Grosjean in sixth. Late ultra soft surge from Romain Grosjean coming through the midfield. Very nice indeed. And
Oh my god, after weeks of like Grosjean trash, Grosjean out of F1, yeah, he's all of a sudden he has strung together two top six finishes in those last three races.
Yep, Grosjean back, everybody, Grosjean back, ahead of Sergio Perez in the Force India, his team.
Who spun? Yeah. Perez spun! Esteban Ocon didn't even make it out of Q1, and that's not the worst of Force India's troubles, as we'll get to in our news segment.
Indeed.
That was a good week.
7th and 8th for the Force Indias. Again, Perez started from 10th. Ocon started from 15th and finished in 8th in the end. A great comeback from him. Great to see Marcus Ericsson back in the points as well in 9th place. A couple of points there for Sauber. His teammate Charles Leclerc went for a pirouette down past turn 1 and...
Oh, beautiful.
It was beautiful. 9.5 from the Russian judge. And yeah, sadly, he finished the lap down because he was one of the early gamblers who didn't make it work. Unfortunately, he would finish today in 15th place. But yeah, and we have to give a shout out as well to the unluckiest man in F1 at the moment. Brendan Hartley gets a point for Toro Rosso. Yes!
He did have a little bit of help because that was originally Carlos Sainz's position, and then he got 10 seconds for overtaking under his safety
car. Carlos!
So now it's Brendan Hartley's 10th place.
Carlos, what were you doing, sir?
Carlos!
Naughty boy. Rest of the positions, Kevin Magnussen in 11th, missed out on a point by half a second, I should say. Carlos Sainz, as mentioned, after the penalty, was dropped from 10th to 12th. Stoffel van Dorn in 30th. Now, I have to segue into Stoffel van Dorn for a little bit here, because my god, the shitstorm after qualifying when Stoffel was stone dead last in 20th place. And it got to a point where even Fernando Alonso admitted after looking at the data that it looks like Stoffel's got something fundamentally wrong with his car. Oh dear. What is going on at McLaren? What the fuck is going on with that team? Like, anyone that knows F1 knows Stoffel is better than this. Like, I've seen tweets and support from people around F1.
Fernando Alonso may have taken an opportunity to take a dig at Kimi Räikkönen in doing so, but he's right. Stoffel van Dorn is a much better driver than he's showing this year. They were about level on points last year.
I think in the end, he only finished 4 points behind Stoffel in last year's Alonso in last year's championship. And Fernando came on the record and said, he's closer to me than Kimi Räikkönen was in 2014. Now, I'd argue that's not as big a compliment as he likes to think it is, given I've seen that 2014 season. But something is fundamentally wrong with Stoffel here in this situation, because apparently his seat might be precarious for next year. There's a lot of silly season rumours regarding that, which again, we'll get to in the news segment. But also, I want to say as well, big shout out to Henry in the Discord, who posted the race lap chart of all the drivers' positions. The midfield looks like me trying to connect my Xbox and my PS4 to my TV. It's it's a shit show in there. Good lord.
It makes spaghetti look organized.
Jesus Christ, that midfield. To say the least, not good. It's crazy, but people are saying that it looks like Stoffel's got a fundamentally fucked chassis by the looks of it, and that could be causing a lot of his problems. Still a solid result in 13th place, but not good. Not good from Stoffel. Sad times. Pierre Gasly, as mentioned, who had the gamble on the full wets, God bless his heart, in 14th, a lap down in the end. Charles Leclerc in 15th place, as mentioned, after the pirouette. And Fernando Alonso, who technically retired but didn't really.
The king of the classified retirement.
Yeah, Fernando Alonso pulled it off to one side with an extra lap to go. It was a lap short of the finish, but again, because of the F1 rules, because he completed over 90% distance, you are technically classed as a finisher. In 16th place, another gearbox problem with the McLaren that caused his DNF. 4 retirements up besides that. Lance Stroll, who had another brake failure on lap 53, a lap after Sebastian's shock retirement. As mentioned, Vettel's accident. Sergei Sorokin only made it to lap 51 after an oil leak. And Daniel Ricciardo, who, again, another power unit problem with an engine they had just replaced, of course. Daniel Ricciardo out as well in last place. Championship standings as we go through round 11. So we're now over the halfway mark for this season. Lewis Hamilton now have a 17-point lead. Oh, that hurts. That stings. A 17-point lead on Sebastian Vettel, 188 to 171. Kimi is another 40 points back in third, with 131. He's 9 ahead of Valtteri Bottas in fourth. Daniel Ricciardo drops to fifth on 106. As mentioned, only 1 point ahead of his teammate Max Verstappen now on 105 due to the good run of results that Verstappen's put together.
Hulkenberg at 52 at 7th, Alonso still in 8th at 40, Kevin Magnussen 9th at 39, and Sergio Perez 10th at 30.
Indeed. Going to the Constructors real quick, Mercedes now back in front of the Constructors Championship with their 1-2 finish. They now have an 8-point lead on Ferrari, who again only scored 15 points to Mercedes 43 this time round. So they're back to second on 302. Red Bull still kind of in no man's land on 211 points. Renault consolidating their fourth with 80 points. And now Force India is only ahead of Haas on countback due to that one Checo podium from Azerbaijan. They're both on 59 points, but on the countback rule, Perez is third, trumps Carlos Sainz is fourth. It's Romain Grosjean's fourth place, just say for Haas there in sixth place. My apologies. McLaren is now in seventh with 48 points. Toro Rosso on 20th in their own battle with the Sauber team. Sauber gained another point on that fight, 20-18. Toro Rosso an hour ahead. The 1 point from Hartley being cancelled out by the two from Ericsson in ninth, and Williams still at the back. A double DNF this weekend due to technical problems. The misery continues. Only 4 points for them. And, what a shit show of a race that was. Especially in the second half. My God. Like I said, the first half you can pretty much skip. Everything after Sebastian's pit stop is utterly insane. Go out of your way to see it.
I'm pretty sure this might be the race of the year. Not gonna lie.
Oh man, it's pretty close. I'm giving this one a solid 4.5 Mario Götze goals against Argentina out of 5.
Yeah, seems about right. an absolutely crazy race, especially in the second half. Go out of your way to see it, and debatable race of the year candidate so far, if you ask me. It's up there with Silverstone and probably Baku. To be fair, this season's been pretty good in general, actually. It's kind of annoying that we've had a handful of pretty good to great races already this year. So, that's always fun. Should we get into the news, fellas?
Yes. We have some very disturbing and very disheartening news coming from Fiat Chrysler. Is Sergio Marchionne is standing down as CEO of Fiat Chrysler due to sudden health concerns. The latest reports is that he is in a deep coma and maybe suffering from a bout of lung cancer, but his health has suddenly so sharply declined that he's had to stand down from all of his posts, which means there is a new head of Fiat Chrysler and there is a new head of Ferrari as of time of recording.
Yeah, it was planned that Sergio Marchionne was going to step down at the end of the year anyway. They already had all his successors planned out, so they're just enacting this plan now instead of at the end of the year.
Wow. Obviously, our best wishes go out to Sergio on this one. That's an awful bit of news. Again, it's the Italian media that's reported. Chance of lung cancer, and the fact he's in a deep coma, that's coming from the Italian media on this one. But again, wish Sergio the best. That's a cruel blow to the team. Yeah. I know they dedicated the pole position to him after Sebastian crossed that line on Saturday. And just a sudden, the last 2 days, really 2-3 days, that news has come through. So it's a very sad one. And
he came in for shoulder surgery, and now his health has taken like a sudden turn for the worse. It is Mike Manley, the former global head of the Jeep brand, that's taking over the whole Fiat Chrysler group. I'm not sure who's taken over Ferrari as a whole.
No, it's not exactly clear who's taking over Ferrari at the moment.
Goodness. Yeah, that's obviously a mess, and definitely hoping for the best for Sergio. Things have gotten strange at Force India. They've been strange for a while, low-key, and now they've gotten even stranger.
Yeah, it looks like Force India are about to enter administration. Talk from the German press is that it could be as early as this week, the week of recording. I mean, we're going to be recording this on Monday, July 23rd, so it may have updated by the time this goes out. But it's looking like Force India are basically on the brink of administration. But on the positive news, it looks like there could be a buyer ready to rescue the team almost immediately. There is a lot of rumoured talk about who said buyer could be. There's talk it could be Michael Andretti, who's always kind of wanted an F1 entry, but not with the ridiculous cost that comes with it. There's a lot of talk it could be another energy drink firm, specifically Rise, rather than the Hype Energy team that are currently a major sponsor for the team at the moment, a major sponsor of their esports team as well. Because, you know, the best kind of money is energy drink money. Who doesn't got that these days? And there's another, and this is the more juicy one. There's rumoured talk that one of the buyers is one Lawrence Stroll. I'm sure that surname rings a bell. Yes, it's Lance's yes. billionaire
owner of
daddy.
owner of Circuit Montreblanc. Great circuit. This might be a good time to segue into Will Buxton's Twitter thread of silly season's rumors, because one other thing is in play is that Renault has an option to pick up Esteban Ocon for 2019. That's one of the rumors. Let me just go run down the thing. So it basically goes that Ferrari, Vettel partnered with either Kimi again or as seeming increasingly likely now Leclerc. Renault, it's understood Ocon is signed despite being a Mercedes driver. The team supposedly wants Alonso back, but right now he's too expensive. Huh? Hülkenberg stays. Force India, Ocon goes, seek a girl to Stroll. That tie-up is looking more and more likely. Rumors also link Kubica to join alongside the Canadian, although there is some chatter that Perez may have already recommitted. McLaren, Van Dorn on shaky ground. Signs believe favored alongside Alonso, Perez outside bat. We're kind of cooling off on Lando Norris because that F2 title might not be a cert. Toro Rosso, Red Bull offers an option on Signs that runs out at the end of September. If it holds off making a decision, Carlos may be forced to return to SDR alongside Gasly.
Ew.
Norris rumored to be in running alongside as he may not be ready for McLaren yet.
Not ready for McLaren right now is a hell of a statement.
Haas, Magnussen seems safe. Perez and Signs rumored. Sauber, most coveted seats as it looks like being a proper BD. Huh. Imagine saying that at the start of the year. If Leclerc moves on, Ericsson will want to say. Raikkonen, Perez, Sainz, Giovinazzi, all rumored. Williams, big unknown. Sorotkin stays. Perez came close to a move a few years back. George Russell, perhaps?
Oh my god.
All of a sudden, like, F1 silly season has exploded, but not in the ways you might expect. It looks like it's all based around the midfield, with the possibility of Kimi Raikkonen still maybe not being retained for next year. It's looking like Daniel Ricciardo is going to stay at Red Bull. There's a lot of heavy press talk that he's going to sign his extension this week between now and Hungary, or certainly because he wants to get it done before the summer break.
But it all this midfield. Well, I'd say. It's not even midfield. It's like just outside of the big three. It feels like, how can I position myself the best way on this dumpster fire that I can end up well after this is all said and done?
19 minutes of fireworks are about to go up in 30 blazing seconds.
Beautiful.
Just like the San Diego Big Bay Boom of 2012.
But yeah, the start of the year, who would ever believe that, like, yeah, the most desirable seat in the rest of the field is that Sauber Alfa Romeo.
What year is this? 2002? Or is it 2012 again?
It's 2012 all over again.
Bring forth Nico Hülkenberg. He's a solid guy. Oh, no, it's like Hülkenberg's one of the safe seats right now. That's crazy. Oh, Jesus.
We have other things that have popped up out of this silly season. We have track news. Will Smith's Miami is not happening for 2019.
God damn it.
Ha!
Yeah. Yeah, the Miami Grand Prix has been pushed back to a projected date of 2020, at which point we will remind you that Port Imperial had been pushed back for a number of years, and it still might happen. Just give it some time.
Let's give it some time. I would say the only reason I'd put this at better odds than Port Imperial is that Liberty Media themselves are putting money into this. It's not like like Miami-Dade County have to come up with the money themselves and organize it themselves.
That's the thing. They want this to happen really, really bad.
Yeah.
And they've also reconfigured the track again.
Oh. Yeah, the reconfig looks pretty good. It's an improvement.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's like that bridge section doesn't look like, you know, it's ready. It's ready and it's ready and wanting.
It no longer looks like Avis on the Sea anymore.
Also we have if Asin might be coming back to the calendar.
No. No.
Dre has very strong opinions about Formula One coming to Asin.
No.
For the Dutch
Grand Prix. Fuck no. No. A million times no. If F1 goes to Asin, I am boycotting the season. I am not doing this. You do not ruin one of the headline bike circuits on the planet and basically the mecca of bike racing today. We are not having you butcher Asin, okay? Fuck no. We're not doing this.
I have some good news. Well, good news for Dre, bad news for, like, everyone else.
Oh no! What a shame!
So, with pretty much, like, the only thing that needs to be changed for, like, Asin to get Grade 1 status is mainly facilities, the circuit would be largely untouched. Only thing is, for those who were fans of, like, end-of-the-line period champ car, knows what an open-wheel race at Asin looks like, and it is not good.
Not just less overtaking opportunities, but
no overtaking.
None. There would not be a single on-track pass. Like, the longest straight Asin's got is like 400 meters. No chance. That would be even worse than Hungary. No way. You cannot do that again. Like, Henry just pointed out in the Discord server, the longest straight is 300 meters. 300!
Also, I believe we are referring to the Hungarian Grand Prix by its Christian name, the Magyar Nagadish.
I'm sorry, the ex-Maddy G just entered this Discord server.
Hey, Dre, just to add to the confusion, when Champ Car raced at Asin, it was the Bavaria Grand Prix.
Less said about that, the better.
I'm not even going to explain it. Everyone listening, you have to look up why it was called the Bavaria Grand Prix. I'm not explaining it.
All that leaves is the much tamer news of, also both Mercedes drivers re-signed and Daniel Ricciardo is close to coming back to Red Bull for 2019. we have larger rims now in F1. Dog, we're putting 18s on these.
Whoop, whoop!
Since
18-inch rims are coming.
Sorry,
to F1.
First it was X-Maddy G, and now Exhibit has entered the Discord server.
Yo, dog! I heard you liked low-profile tires, so we bumped the rim size from 15 inches to 18 inches, so that Michelin might debate.
Whoa, 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 whoa! 15s. We're running 13s, my friends.
Damn.
Yeah, IndyCar right now is running 15s.
IndyCar's out here pimping. So who out here is popping RJ's corner?
Oh dear. But that's only the starter to get in here. Also, besides going to 18s, no more tire blankets.
Oh shit, yeah. And this of course is gonna mean like they're gonna have to rework the suspension bits because of the larger wheel size and because of the low profile tires. No tire warmers as part of F1.
That's going to be interesting.
That's going to make race starts and outlaps after pit stops really
we're going to get a lot
fun.
Of IndyCar shit, yeah. Basically. Like Robert Wickens might get plowed into the back by Simon Pagenaud again. It's like we had at Toronto.
Pretty much someone's like, what's making that IndyCar and that Formula 2 real entertaining? We need to do more of that.
What, stalling the engine? rolling starts? No? But apparently Michelin is now interested in a comeback if F1 goes to 18-inch rims.
It's coming home.
It's coming home. The French are coming back. And Ferrari are going to be the rebels. They're going to run Pirelli. Everybody else worth of them is going to be on Michelin. It's 2004 again, goddammit. It's 2004. Fun times for all involved.
I don't think we're going to get a tire war out of this. I think we might get a change of tire supplier in the long run. But again, that's proposed for 2021, and that still feels like it's ages away.
Yeah, it's 2020. I don't know what Michelin's going to be like down the road, but right now Michelin are not about high degradation. Like, Formula E acts for that. They're like, if you want us in the series, we're going to have no degradation. We're going to have an all-weather tire. Like, I'm pretty sure it's required that Formula E teams have to run a single set of tires for the entire race day, which is, you know, practice, qualifying, and the race.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, hey, Michelin could be coming back. More on that if that rocks up.
Michelin out here living like it's the year 2005.
Indeed.
I'm just gonna walk.
Ooh, so my bad. Ooh, wonder what that was about. Just before we go, real quick as well, predictions for hungry people.
Ooh, God.
Sebastian Vettel currently bookie's favorite at 2-1. Amazingly.
Yeah, but Hungary is also Hamilton country. I have no idea. What
yeah,
to
the
expect.
The Red Bulls have come all the way in from like 8 to like 100-30 for Max Verstappen as third favorite.
Yeah, you're right, because if there's races that Red Bull will contend on, it's tracks where you don't need a lot of power in Hungary.
So, like, are we going to get Christian Horner complaining about how much time they lose on the straights again? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we're losing about, like, you know, 1.5, maybe 1.6 seconds down the straights. So we've got to run these really skinny wings to compensate for that. And, you know, maybe we'll challenge for the win this weekend. Who knows?
I just want more Cyril Abiteboul on the radio with, like, his deep and very thick French accent. it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. It's like, you couldn't make out what he was saying half the time. And he's like, yep, thanks, Cyril. Also, shout out to Christian Horner for basically giving Simon Lazenby the crotch grab prank after Saturday in quarterfinal. Christian Horner is a lad. What a boy. Doing what most fans have wanted for him to happen to Simon Lazenby for quite some time.
Yeah, so quick prediction for Hungary. Anyone in a big three car can win.
Yay! Excitement!
And if something goes really sideways, anyone outside the big three can get on the podium.
Stop it.
Maybe.
There just needs to be, like, collisions.
Somebody fire up the random number generator. We'll get a hold of this. Like, Sergio Perez has finished in third again. How does he keep doing that?
It's like, oh, Sergio Perez scores a podium the same day Force India files for administration.
Sigh. But that will just about do it for this week's episode of Motorsport 101, episode 152. Fez, you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter @motorsport_101, our personal handles @Harrison101HD, @RJOConnell, and @RyanEricKing. And if you really like us, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you both early access to both this show and to Bike Live. Episode 70 will be out later this weekend with me and Lewis, as always, breaking down all the action from another British Superbike round at Brands Hatch, as Josh Brooks became the king of Brands by taking a supreme double win over there, and a preview to what I think is now the biggest bike race in all of motorsport now, the Suzuka 8 Hours this weekend. Absolutely stacked field from... I said it before, it's basically the all-star game of bike races now. Kawasaki, Jonathan Rea, Leon Haslam, Bradley Ray, Sylvain Guintoli on a Suzuki, PJ Jacobson filling in for Leon Kamiya on the Honda team as well. Yamaha bringing both their big guns. Alex Lowes and Michael Vandermark both are going to be there as well. It's going to be an absolutely stacked race. It's going to be on Saturday morning. I think it's Saturday / Sunday morning. I think it's about 3:15 in the morning for you European fans out there. It's all going to be live on British Eurosport 2. Julian Ryder's commentating as well. That alone is worth the price of admission. So we'll be previewing all of that going into episode 70 later this week. We'll be back for episode 153 for what could be a doubleheader week. Who knows? We'll have to see what happens in Hungary. Episode 153, the Hungarian Grand Prix, the last F1 race before the summer break, and IndyCar is back as well. I've forgotten where they're racing. Somebody fill me in.
Mid-Ohio.
Oh, God, it's Dixieland. God damn it. That's the last thing we needed.
O-H-I-O. Also Pietro back.
Yay! Pietro back! Pietro Fittipaldi's coming back. That should be great. And it's on CNBC. Yay! Doubleheader, Hungarian Grand Prix, and IndyCar at Mid-Ohio this weekend. So one, maybe two episodes, depends on what happens in both races. We'll figure it out next week. But in the meantime, I've been Andre Harrison. I'm going to check myself into counselling. They've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. I'm about to drink another glass of cider. May the good Lord help us all. Thanks for listening, and sayonara.
Later, y'all!
Bye!
I cannot believe
you are the world champion! And finally this week, James Hinchcliffe put a ring on it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay! This weekend has been crazy. It was certainly insanity. I don't know if it was engineered. Nobody planned this shit.
Well, that's what happens, King, when life moves at the speed of Formula 1.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? I think Becky Dalton, Hinch's new fiancé, summed it up better than I can. I've just been served with a life sentence.
Good luck. Good luck.